It's Sunday, which means it's time for Viewpoint Presents with Malcolm and Michael Johns. Each week, we bring you the top global and national news stories presented with facts and top-tier analysis, all from a perspective rooted in America's founding principles. Join us in defending our great nation and American liberty. Now, here's Malcolm and Michael with the week's top stories.
I've often talked about the fact that one of the unique things about our country, about the United States, is that we tend to have a corrective measure. So if we go too far to one side, the left or the right, or what we would consider too far, then it would typically correct itself. And often you would see that. The American people would speak up, they would vote accordingly, and you know that power would change again. The levers of power in Washington would change, and it would bring us back to more of a, where most people are, which is geared more towards the center, really. And we can describe all what that means and all, but you know what I'm talking about. And now, you know, you think through the Barack Obama years, right? Think about that a moment. Now, that was, many people would suggest, a fairly radical agenda. It took it pretty far to the left. It made a lot of people uncomfortable. And so what happened? Well, we seen what happened in the 2016 race. It snapped back more, and then you had Donald Trump. So Donald Trump did a U-turn on a lot of those policies with Obama that many would suggest were un-American. It depends where your political ideology is, but you know what I'm talking about. But it was a complete about face. It was more of an America first agenda versus Obama was more of a globalist agenda. Now we see the importance here of 2020. And it's right in front of us, my fellow Americans, right now. You've seen all of this America first and make America great again, and everything about our great country and our people is now the complete opposite. It's a complete, again, turnabout. It's a U-turn. It's a 180. And that's what's happened right now. And now you're seeing, but it's not just left of center. It's not even just left of center. It's not even like remotely like where you can see center. This thing is so far off the edge, it's fallen off the cliff. So this is where you would describe the agenda radical. This is a radical agenda, and I'm going to prove it to you in just a moment here. But before I do, welcome to Viewpoint Presents, my fellow Americans. This is Malcolm, along with Michael Johns here. I describe this, Michael, as absolutely a radical agenda is what I see. And here's the thing I think the people are going to have to pay attention to is how far are they willing to go with a Biden radical agenda? Because, and that's where we're starting to get a little touchy here. And, you know, if they put other measures in place that are structurally, we're not able to snap back, that could be a problem. But this agenda with the Biden administration, I would suggest to you, is so radical. It is so out there. Like, I've never seen anything like this in my life. And if you just come through the first few executive actions, you see that, Michael, right away. And I've got a series of them I want to talk to you about today. But and if you really read his executive actions, they tell a story. And I got to tell you what, Michael, it is not a pleasant story if you believe in America.
No. Good to be back with you, Malcolm. That's a good read. I think, you know, a few themes we have at work here. One is that the Biden administration realizes that it needs to, because of the unpopularity of its agenda, act both unilaterally and urgently. And that completely contradicts what Biden as a candidate had said when he criticized President Trump for utilizing executive orders, saying we're a democracy, we need consensus. Of course, these 42 executive orders were prepared in rapid fashion, you know, ready for signature on day one, pretty much, which means they'd been vetted through DOJ, I think, almost certainly before he took office, which itself is intriguing and worthy of study. I've never heard of that happening. And the there's been no consultation with anyone. I mean, forget consultation with congressional Republicans or those aligned with the Trump agenda. They've been completely excluded, but so have congressional Democrats for the most part. And we continue to have, I think, in Congress itself, this and in D.C., this issue of too much elitist action and not enough populist participation and not enough consensus building. All of these issues, as you correctly said, are immensely controversial. They're almost certainly harmful to the country, which is enough reason to oppose them. But what makes it somewhat worse is the fact that when we go to hold individuals accountable, we don't have any congressional involvement. So 2 years from now, in 2022, in the off-year elections, it'll be very easy for Democrats to go back and say, well, you know, Biden did that, but I don't really know when. You know, really, we should have every representative on record for this or against it. We don't have that.
No, we don't. No. Let me come through a few of these. Now, let me put some of these out here in the light of day. And I just want people to get a feel of where this agenda is headed. So listen up, folks. Here we are. Here's some of the executive actions. Re-engage with the World Health Organization. Now, follow me on these. These are all globalist type policies and not our friends or partners. Create position of COVID-19 response coordinator. Rejoin the Paris Climate Agreement. Revoke the permit for the Keystone XL pipeline. Ask agencies to extend eviction and foreclosure moratoriums. Ask Education Department to extend student loan pause. Abolish the 1776 Commission, Michael. That was to teach American history in the schools, God forbid, you know, can't to educate the kids. You can't do that, buddy. Preserve, fortify DACA, which helps the dreamers. Require mask distancing on all federal property by federal workers, and they're going further now. And of course, then they lie with some of these others, like reverse travel ban targeted in primarily Muslim countries. All a lie. Stop construction of border wall. Yeah, it's a total lie. Stop construction of border wall. I mean, combat discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, gender identity. I mean, you just come through these, Michael. And you see where they're headed, and they give anybody, any reasonable person should be fearful of, A, what's their real agenda here? Because it's not pro-American, it's pro-globalist, that's for sure. And so it should scare the hell out of everybody, don't you think? This list of...
These are all terrifying initiatives. With maybe a couple exceptions, right. Uniformly destructive to the country. And by the way, they're all in typical, branding fashion, put really sexy names on them, like strengthening Medicaid and the ACA.
The
euphemistic description that socialized healthcare, protecting women's health at home and abroad. And you dive into what's actually involved with that. Well, it's, we're back into funding abortions for in foreign countries.
We're going to murder the babies for you.
Right. And not even in the United States. We're going to pay for abortions in foreign countries. Tackling the climate crisis. Oh, that sounds nice. You know, when you get into it, it's all, oil and job destruction.
Destroying our energy field.
The 1619 project you mentioned, advancing racial equity. Well, are you opposed to that, Malcolm? We're all for that.
That's right.
And that this has been an ongoing theme. We used to joke in Congress that if you put the word child or children in any piece of legislation, that it would automatically pass, even if it had nothing to do with child or children. And this is a longstanding practice of a political tactic of distracting from the actual substance. So when you dive into the substance, this is unbelievable, a lot of these things. And this, back to my earlier point, we need deliberation on these topics and national consensus. I mean, let's just take some of the issues you rattled off. World Health Organization. We were misled by the World Health Organization as it related to the transmittability of COVID. It was not a small factor in the blossoming and hugely costly pandemic in this country and around the world. We subsequently learned about an extraordinary Chinese disinformation campaign from the CCP within the World Health Organization.
And the WHO partnered with China. They are totally responsible, as you just said, for the spread of this pandemic in ways that are almost unimaginable.
Yeah, so just dismiss the fact that historically, if you go back decades with vaccinations and other things, there are some things that WHO has done in a positive way. All right, so let's set that aside. But let's look at it in the present tense scenario. It has been a malevolent, destructive, counterproductive force that's been described, I think, realistically, almost as a wholly owned subsidiary of the Chinese Communist Party.
Propaganda
and this
arm.
Is a big part of what we need to come to grips with, and with the American people, I think, have yet to really fully grasp, is the magnitude of influence that the Chinese Communist Party has been able to exert within these multinational institutions, and even with our within our own institutions in the United States. We need to be conscious of it, because they are a destructive, almost wholly anti-American force. So when you look at the actions of China in this pandemic, just about every conceivable step that they could have taken to make this pandemic more costly, more deadly, more frightening on the United States and the rest of the world, they took. And the President Trump correctly said, look, this international body is designed firstly to be able to get into countries to inspect and provide research information to the rest of the world and to clinicians. China just said, no, you're not coming in. They said the same to our own CDC, of course. So they failed on that mission. You know, number two, they had reporting obligations as it related to the reality of the situation. Not only did they not report the correct information, they misled the world into the middle of last January, saying that there was no evidence of human-to-human transmittability according to their Chinese sources, which they, of course, were misled by and yet presented to the rest of the world as being credible forces. So this issue of whether we should be relying on the World Health Organization, I guess is my point, should be one I don't believe we should be. That's, you know, a studied conclusion of mine. I think President Trump did the right thing getting us out of it. And I think we need an alternative source developed. You know, we continue to rely on this. We're just procrastinating in the reality that we are unprepared for the next pandemic, because we're going to turn to this agency that's been politically corrupted. And you can see within each one of these executive orders those sort of examples where you say, I don't think we should probably be doing this, but at least we should be having a deliberation. You know, let Biden's HHS or State Department or other officials go up on the Hill and testify as to why they think the World Health Organization is a beneficial functioning organization that benefits U.S. interests. Because that's not the view of a large percentage of Americans who've looked at it. But those questions don't have to be answered when you sign it in 30 seconds with a pen and put a nice label on it.
Well, again, it's just not even the amount of executive actions that have been taking place here, but the speed at which they are being put into play. And you're right, these kinds of actions don't happen overnight. I mean, they take very thorough planning, and you've got to have a lot of vetting on these and to make sure that it can be done. And yet all these were ready to go on day one, which really tells you plenty here. What really alarms me, Michael, is so many of their policies and procedures and ideas are all involved around climate. Everything seems to be pushing toward climate. We seem to be selling our soul out and our ability to function. One of the biggest things that's going to happen now, I got to tell you, we really need to talk about is, and let me put a couple of predictions out for y'all as well, and that's this. Take a look at the pump of what you were paying when just before the administration came into power. Take a look at your gallon of gas on the pump there. And just know that you're never going to see that price again. It's going away here very quickly, very shortly. And that's the kind of energy, what's real life's pain that's going to be felt now. And why I say that is they are, I mean, I can't even get my arms around this or my mind as far as what they're doing to our energy. We have finally become energy independent, which was a landmark moment for our country. Finally, not to be in these wars with Middle East and to be held ransom and, you know, all the games that they play with us around the world. And finally, we're at that point. And now Biden systematically now has reversed all those policies, Michael. We're now going to become, you know, really energy starved, and we're not going to be able to.
That's really the point.
Control of our own destiny anymore. You know that this is a real problem, and the energy.
Well, and here's the irony. Here's the irony, Malcolm, is that the global energy production will not slow. Other countries will pick up the slack.
Exactly.
So you can shut down the Keystone pipeline. That's fine. You know, that production's now going to go to Russia. Russia will pick that up. And they'll resell it to the world, possibly. It makes
sense. So think about what you're saying.
Same with offshore. Think of offshore drilling. It's very perfect.
They're cutting that out too.
Yeah. During Obama, they would put in these restrictions on offshore drilling, but then they would authorize Latin American and other countries to come in and drill in those exact same areas. So it would deprive the United States of energy development that could be utilized to contain energy prices and meet our energy needs, but it would facilitate and assist foreign countries. I think that's where we're going here too. This Paris climate agreement will do just about nothing for the climate. And, you know, that's, you know, a studied conclusion of individuals mm-hmm. who've looked into it. I mean, we're talking about an enormously incremental reduction of emissions. Additionally, the U.S., if you look at it for the last decade or so, has been on a positive trend as it relates to our emissions. I mean, because we have self-regulated in a lot of ways these issues. Now, setting aside whether we're acting correctly or negatively, the broader point about the Paris Agreement is the American people and our elected representatives should be the individuals deciding what is and is not an acceptable emission rate, not foreign bureaucrats. And, you know, just on that basis alone, okay, we can be pro-environment and anti-Paris agreement.
Absolutely.
Because because the rub in the Paris agreement mm-hmm. is all in the details. So if you're talking in an uninformed way and describe this as a pro-environmental initiative, you're kind of missing the details, because one of the singular most important steps you would take in a global climate agreement, if we had one, would be to impose limitations on the world's largest polluter, China.
That's and yet, exactly. And next is India.
China is excluded from any reductions in their carbon emissions under this agreement for decades.
All right. So let me throw a quandary here at all of us now, Michael, and to distill what you're talking about here is so vitally important. Think about this a moment. What you're saying is this. Everybody understand this, please. What's happening is that it's not like, you know, whatever steps they take to knock us down a few pegs beyond the Keystone Pipeline, but with drilling and energy and coal and all the things they're doing that they're going to knock our energy over. All right, so it's not like that energy isn't going to be made and used somewhere else. We're not changing the carbon footprint whatsoever. It's just being redistributed to other people to get wealthy. And so all of this is being done as a pain point to the American people. So let me ask you this. Why is it? First off, all the people on the left who think, oh, wow, this is really very noble cause with the Biden administration. They're now going after our climate in a very positive way. They're extending the life of the planet, which is all rubbish. But let's say you believe that. OK, let's say you believe it. And they're really putting the fight forward with climate. They're taking it very seriously. God, these guys are heroes. And then when you get into the argument that they don't follow it up and say what Michael and I are just saying, all of that is just going to somebody else to distribute, another distributor that we can still use in the same stuff because there's not enough in R&D and you can't use wind and solar to do crap. And none of that stuff is there. And so we're, you know, you want to investigate that stuff in the future, that's fine. But that's not where we're at in this current modern cycle of living. So, Michael, with all that said, why can't those people now that are thinking loosey-goosey of how terrific this is with climate, that is, why can't they understand that someone else is going to do it? The carbon footprint is still there. We're not saving anything. We're certainly not saving the world. The only thing we're doing is we're sucker punching America in the gut again. And the pain factor for us and our people here is going to be tremendous. And who would vote for that, Michael? Why would anybody in their right mind vote for that, for God's sake? Talk to me.
Well, apparently no one. That's why you sign it in a executive order with, you know, 10 other agreements and throw a nice name on it and don't have to explain, you know, the details of it. And that would be not functional if we had a working White House press corps that actually asked difficult questions of Jen Psaki and those who should be in a position to answer this. But even when they are asked about it, you get these cliche-ridden explanations. So this is going to cost the American people trillions of dollars in economic output. So with that one signature, Joe Biden inflicted trillions of dollars of economic damage on this country. in the coming years. No one presents the question of, you know, gee, what are the offsetting benefits to the American worker or to Americans generally for this? No one asks the question of another big deficiency of this agreement. What are the enforcement mechanisms? What do we do when we find a country that's actually not living up to the emission requirements? How is that actually measured? None of those details really get asked. And by the way, there's almost no enforcement mechanism. This is kind of like almost a goodwill act. You sign it, and then, as is often the case with global strategic and commerce-related agreements, the United States lives up to it impeccably, mm-hmm. and other countries cheat, violate, don't live up to the standards, and we have no recourse. Ultimately, you get a president who says this isn't really working, and we get out of it. This is an ongoing issue, which gets to the point of it's very difficult, just as a matter of general principle, to have functional global agreements. Mm-hmm. We are dealing with governments of the world, many of whom themselves are not even accountable to their own people, that have very aggressive, concrete agendas, and who are exceptional in being able to manipulate these agreements for self-interest. I mean, this agreement, you know, has got China's fingerprints all over it. It's basically a mass redistribution of wealth. While we inhibit our economic development and our job creation, and China has no such restrictions. So if the goal, as we know is the goal, for the CCP to eclipse the United States and as the leader in the global economy, this sort of agreement fits right in with that agenda. And of course, that is ultimately what the agenda is.
Think about how sick this is. The pain we're going to inflict on the public here for the sake of goodwill, as you say, Michael, like somehow we think we're doing good of some sort, and the energy spiral that is going to be in place. You know, I wonder from this point forward, all things considered, keeping energy over here on the side a moment here, and looking at the agenda of Biden, and looking at a lot of foreign adversaries are now going to begin to test this administration, I am certain. Now, President Trump, for the first time in recent times that we can recall, it really did not engage in any war. In fact, he removed troops abroad and did things that were remarkable that he promised he would do. I wonder, Michael, sincerely, do you have any confidence that we won't be in another war in this administration? Or do you have any sense is this a string of success that Biden can continue that Trump started? Or do you see reversed? No?
Wow. Yeah, well, you have to look basically, I mean, not just an opinion, but historical evidence. So you say, we have 8 years of track record where Joe Biden was on the right part of the national security team, a lead really in our national security policy. We saw ISIS emerge from nothing to a major regional force on their watch. We saw Russia's invasion, illegal occupation of Crimea on their watch. We saw China's expansion in the South China Sea, the creation of all these manufactured islands and territorial violations or clear violations of international law initiated almost without challenge from them. I think all evidence suggests that they will weaken our defenses where we already have deficiencies. China has more ships in their Navy, for instance, than the United States does at this point, which is an unsettling fact. And so they'll weaken defenses and they'll accommodate, even appease hostile foreign powers, and we'll face aggression. And already China is testing us with rhetoric and with engagement and position statements on Taiwan's independence, which they don't acknowledge, as you may know. We need to be standing boldly. And you know, Trump did a really not a well enough appreciated balancing act with China in those 4 years of being able to prevent direct conflict with China while maintaining a position of strength in the Taiwan Straits and in the South China Sea, where China has very expansionist ambitions. It was really an exceptional job on his part. And I think we're dealing with a government now, man, when you go through and look at the personnel and the people they've put into position, I mean, it's just filled with people that have had accommodating, chummy relationships with the Chinese Communist Party. I mean, I mean, we're talking about, you know, like well over 100 political appointees who, you know, are very accommodating and have had longstanding economic, political, and other interactions with them. And as the Hunter Biden story, which, by the way, hasn't gone away, that's still out there, in case anybody's wondering. Well, yeah, there's been no accountability. Hunter Biden's wandering around the West Wing the last few days, offering guidance purportedly to his dad on China policy.
Yeah.
Still have no accountability on that issue. And this
You're not going to get any either. So.
And, you know, we called the Soviet Union an evil empire based on the things that they did. I would challenge anyone to say that the evil being done with the Uyghurs, which was properly by Mike Pompeo in the final days labeled genocide. Mm-hmm. This is a regime now officially recognized by the United States of America engaged in genocide, which Biden, I just saw already planning on revisiting. But
Well, here's the thing. Do you know, I want to ask you something. Do you know you can't buy a glass of champagne anymore in China? Did you know that, Michael?
No. Well, is that the Australia-related trade issue?
No. You know why you can't? Because they drank it all in celebration of the Biden presidency.
joke by the Malcolm.
I mean, come on. You can't buy a glass of champagne there. They drank it all, buddy. Come on. I mean, these people were rolling around like pigs in mud. I mean, they were happy drinking champagne. Biden, he's our man. He can't do it. Nobody can.
You know, I've often thought this is kind of a conflict that we face, is that the internal divisions in our country are celebrated by our enemies. And, you know, people like you and I stand up for positions, and then we inevitably, in some way, I suppose, we contribute to that. I mean, we could just like when Biden got up and talked about unity, for instance, let me just tell you what that meant. He means, you know, do it my way and then we'll be unified. He doesn't mean, you know, I'll give a little bit, you give a little bit, and we'll operate harmoniously. And that's, you know, the great that's so abundant. It we're follow the actions and the steps in this unilateral vast expansion of globalist and government authority in our economy, and a lack of autonomy, basically ending our border security with one signature. And which I'm encouraged is already being resisted in courts. But, you know, these are vast definitions of what the United States of America is. And here we have a guy that, you know, to this moment, you know, 47% of the country, about half the country, feels is in that position illegitimately. And he certainly has. I see, by the way, just projecting what's going to happen here, a quick burnout on Joe Biden and these daily press briefings by Jen Psaki are getting old already.
Yeah,
I'll circle back with you on that, et cetera, not answering questions directly, you know, indefensible positions. There's just a certain arrogance that's projected. And it can only come from people who spent like 47 years in government. And the way they describe things, which I know is the way you understand it as well, is, you know, it's like, they're talking down to the American people. You don't really understand. We understand.
There's an agenda here in play. And by the way, on Jen Psaki's,
never got that from Trump. Or any of his people.
On Jen Psaki's tombstone, we're going to put, I'll circle back with you later. Yeah. We're going to put it right on her tombstone there for her. But that is the
I thought after she got the broad criticism on that phrase that we certainly would never hear it again. And then sure enough, she just wrote like right back to it.
It's her DNA.
You know, she's coming. Let me just, you know, there's a certain sloppiness in their press briefings that could only happen when you have that accommodating White House press corps. You know, if Trump had sent out any, you know, Spicer or McEnany or any of these press secretaries to try to do what they would have been torn apart. Yeah. I mean, she's unprepared. She's routinely deferring to other departments and agencies or saying, I'll circle back with you on that.
Oh, she's a train wreck.
By the way, when she was at the State Department, mm-hmm. she caught my attention during the Obama administration then mm-hmm. for being unbelievably ineffective.
I remember.
Learning foreign affairs, which was kind of like the centerpiece in the beginning of my career, is not an easy thing.
Yeah. Well, Obama had a lot of frontmen people like that. And she was one of them. You're exactly right. Listen, I want to do a little business here with our people here. And we're talking about China here. And I'm thinking to myself here, Michael, that, okay, like if we don't start to get serious, and I think the warning here for everybody, if the bulk of the country, and I'd say patriots, but really it's everybody, you can't suggest, or I should not suggest, let me put it that way, that independents, moderates, and those left of center are not patriots, because I do believe they love their country. I'm not suggesting otherwise. So I think we need to choose our words carefully there when we make this statement. But I think we all, separate from the Marxists, the people that are trying to change our country, the people we're just talking about with Biden, I think there's some big decisions we're going to have to make ahead, because this lifestyle that we have is not sustainable under the current administration and the changes they're making and the radical position they're taking. This is going to have real world impacts to everybody, I'm telling you right now. And what's going to have to happen now, and what I would suggest to everybody, is we're all going to have to start to be very conscious. So we're going to have to do a little belt tightening ourselves. I also predict there's going to be an economic collapse ahead. And I don't say this stuff with any joy in my step, but you see what's going on in the market. This thing's going to blow up ahead. And because of the debt they're taking on and the investments they're making and the tight restraints they're making now with the energy and what's happening in our country, you're going to see a decline here like you haven't seen before, probably in our lifetimes, people. It's coming. I hate to say and be the bearer of any of that news. We need to prepare for the future. Part of what we need to do, Michael, is we need to shop with people that have our interest at heart. And one of the things that we are so sloppy with, and I'm talking about all of us now, you and I'm talking about everybody out there. We oftentimes make convenience our number one priority. We're not making our priority the salvation, certainly, of our country or where the goods are made, or if the goods are supporting some bad, outfits. Like Antifa, like the Marxist groups, Black Lives Matter, like these groups, or like China. We're just talking about China, Michael. So if we don't start knowing where we're spending our money, like I'm very conscious of it now. I will literally, Michael, I don't know if you believe me when I tell you this, I will literally drive past multiple places that I know do not have my interest at heart, our country's interest at heart. And I will drive out of my way to go somebody else. I also will not buy online from people that I know are vetted in this garbage we're talking about and supporting these radical groups. I think we need all Americans to do that. And that's why I mentioned shoptotheright.com. It is a new movement and organization with a nationwide database where you can go and check out geographically or check out, geographically, Michael, you can do also by category, right? You can do several ways on there. Yeah. And then you see who you want to do business with. And if you have a company out there or a business, by the way, or an organization or somebody, have them sign up there at shoptotheright.com. Michael, if we don't start doing
even if it's small, even if you're a sole proprietor, definitely.
Yeah, I mean,
it doesn't like, so when we say a bit, you don't have to be employing a couple hundred people.
But those are the people that need to do it because it levels the playing field, Michael, for those people.
That's right.
Look,
in this era, we need to be a champion of American-based small business.
Mm-mm-mm. I mean, that's it right there. So there's the message. So listen, so two things I want you to remember from this conversation. If you have a business, sign up there. It's free. I mean, it doesn't cost you. You can go sign up. If you want to do more with them, you can. It's all there. And let's start using them as a source. They've got some cool things coming out, too, I've discovered in the last few days that are going to surprise a lot of you out there. You want to really pay attention to this organization. There's a lot more to be written. It's brand new. It's a new deal here now. But I mean, a lot of us that are aware of Amazon and how... I don't know what you want to call them, but they're not really serving our interest here in our country. And you see what Jeff Bezos is up to, and it's just wealth building is all it is for these organizations. And they're going to have a piece. I'll give you a little teaser right now. They're going to have a part of this thing just ahead here. Well, you'll literally be able to shop right there on Shop to the Right. But right now, it's a great resource to get those leads. So check it out, people. ShopToTheRight.com. And we can all do our part, and we really need to. This is really important stuff we're going to talk about. And I just see this as a path forward. If we don't, people, you can kiss your country goodbye. When you see what Biden is doing and the rest of the radicals, I mean, I don't know what to tell you, but there's not going to be a country left. So, all right, a lot more to happen here. There's a couple of big things I want to throw at Michael, even in regards, he was just mentioned about the election. I've got something I want to throw at him as well on that and some other real important pieces to this. So we'll take a quick pause and we'll be back on the other side.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Well, my fellow Americans, how did you feel watching footage on the news of domestic terrorists looting our stores and burning our cities down? You were probably disgusted and angry as much as I was. It's disturbing what's going on. Well, you'd be shocked to know that your shopping habits are supporting these extremists. Companies like Amazon, Nike, Disney, FedEx, it's an endless list. And they've been supporting these radical groups. Let's stop supporting companies that fund these extremist groups. We can all do our part. Visit shoptotheright.com and you'll find businesses in a nationwide database and companies that are aligned with our American values. Visit shoptotheright.com and let's all make a difference.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep, but it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Fighting every day against the internet monopolies that are trying to stifle our right to free speech and freedom of assembly. 5 years on the air and we will not be silenced. America Out Loud Talk Radio. It's a fight for the soul of humanity. You know, we talk about election integrity, and you made a couple of hints to that in the first segment about, well, that's if, you know, and you and I promised that we would continue the fight afterward and that whenever that sees the light of day, and that's an interesting juxtaposition in American politics to see an election disputed after the fact, after the inauguration, and to see evidence come out that would 100% show with no uncertain terms. And that really is a quandary we've got to decide and we've got to discuss ahead. Is that a place we should put our energy in, Michael? You know what I'm saying? Is that a place we should exert
decision.
Energy? What do you think about that? What do you think?
Well, I think if we had more support on our side from conservative institutions, particularly in Washington, D.C., it'd be a lot easier. But it becomes difficult when the precise institutions who have championed the Constitution, the rule of law, and representative democracy just decided to sit this one out, which they apparently have done. And that is immensely troubling to me. And it kind of gets to this point that Trump made from day one, which I always thought there were a few exceptions to this, that everything down there is the swamp driven by money and influence and personal relations, not common sense. But I have to ask, where are these institutions? And even if they're disagreeing to the vast evidence that you and I have reviewed and discussed in previous episodes, I think they should be issuing then rebuttals on this. You know, so if the position is no, this was not a fraudulent election, it was completely bona fide, and the all of these, the Texas AG of filing and the Navarro three edition reports now out by Peter Navarro, documenting in great detail how hundreds of thousands of votes across six states swung this election in Biden's favor is inaccurate, then we deserve a detailed report on that. I mean, just take the ineligible voters in Georgia, which they count into the, you know, six figures. Where is the rebuttal on that? They say, no, everything's free and fair. It's been certified. You're disrupting democracy by questioning it. I make the complete opposite argument. The greatest disservice to representative democracy is to not address these issues.
This is a big point right now. This is a big point right now. Yeah, no, let's get that out. Hold on now. Slow it down. That's a big point you're making right there, because you're right. The left argue that it's a perfect point, Michael. Perfect point. They're now doubling down. I don't know if you've seen this last Thursday here. They now have, did you see this Vote at Home Act the Democrats are putting in play here?
The two Washington state senators, yeah.
And what do you think of it?
Oh, it's a disaster. I mean, you and I talked for weeks about the risks and dangers of mail-in balloting, and the fact that if you simply mail out to voters these ballots, the delivery system alone has got an error rate that's extraordinary. It inevitably lands in the hands of people that it's not intended to get to. And there's like 6 points of error, of possible human error along the way. And it is not the way there's a reason we don't do it that way. You know, I mean, there's a reason for decades that we have not done it this way, that we require people to go to a polling location to identify themselves. Ideally, they would identify themselves with voter identification, which Democrats continue to oppose. And ideally, we'd be purging our voter rolls. So take someone like me, who in my adult life, I've probably lived in half a dozen states. I've voted in all those states. I probably am still registered in most of those states, because we don't have systems where we go back in and reassure that individual still lives at that location in that district. And particularly in a mobile 21st century where people move around a lot, you got to be doing that.
The system is horrible. I mean, we're living in a stone age when it comes to our election system. You know, it's an embarrassment.
And only because we choose to.
Well, they absolutely, because the right tells the left, okay, and the left says, well, let me just go further here with this doubling down. I mean, this blows my mind here. So listen to what they're doing here now. This is called the Vote at Home Act. And again, this is probably under the radar screen for a lot of people, but let's bring it out in front of the light of day here. So it goes like this. The statement here is, our democracy is stronger when every American can vote without standing in ridiculous lines or having to take time off work or school to exercise their constitutional rights. You know, one of the things I want to say to that, it amazes me with the left. You know, they make voting such a non-priority priority. Like, you know, like you could do these things. You can get all kinds of, pain points, Michael, with COVID or anything else in your life.
Yeah, while you're saying that, thinking of the fact that postal office says how much time we spend standing in lines of government-owned postal offices. I'll tell you what, on the basis of not needing to stand in lines, how about we privatize the American postal system?
Yeah, well, sure. Yeah.
On what basis do we need our federal government running that?
Well, we don't. But here's one here. I mean, the whole thing is crazy. And so now it's under the guise of, it's not really, you know, what do you get out of this? Well, what you really should get out of this is what they're really saying is the voting is really not that important, that we'll make it available with all kinds of fraud tied to it, because it is fraud. So here's what's interesting, what I want to present to everybody, because, you know, for months and months we talked about if the word we used was a two-letter word, if Joe Biden won, that won't happen. If the radicals took charge, that probably won't happen. If the American people put them into office with a crazy agenda, that probably won't happen. And it was all these ifs that we talked about this for months, verbatim. And it's like, okay, and all those ifs happen now. And here we are. And then we kept talking on the, well, they want to pack the Supreme Court. Well, they want to add more states. Well, they want to make just voting so you can do it on the toilet. I mean, anything at all. Is it not? You're being radical. Stop it, man. The left doesn't want to do that. They just want to protect the climate and sing kumbaya and all hold hands, right? And yet this is what's happening now with this whole thing. Now you see they have a committee together, Michael, to expanding packing the Supreme Court. They have a damn committee together, people. This is what they want to do now. You see that, Michael, right? You see that?
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was just a fairy tale.
And they're not committing to abandoning the filibuster in the Senate either.
No, and the states are coming.
These should be surprising. Biden was able to dodge these questions, and media never held him down on them during the campaign.
So here's my point. Here's my point. You take this radical agenda, Michael, we're talking. I just want people to understand. I'm tired of people saying that we're being the radical ones by pointing out what is fairly obvious to us who are paying attention. And to the rest of the people who are not, tough shit, sit down and pay attention and listen up, people, because your country is being sold out. And here's the thing, this whole thing here about Vote at Home Act. I mean, this is real stuff they're doing now. This is taking the fraudulent election of 2020. See, this is what radicals do. They double down and triple down. These people are over the top through the cuckoo's nest. They are crazy. And this is counteracting to, you see, there's a bill the Republicans have out as well right now. They have a bill they're putting forward, which is the direct opposite of that, Michael. If I can find it here, I'll give you a piece of that. Do you realize what I'm saying? So it's the direct opposite. There's another bill in place, which is direct opposite the Republicans are putting forth based on a lot of the things that we've been talking about here. And it's a direct opposite. And now it's a question of trying to get something through the system. Michael, I don't feel good about any of this. I smell a rat here coming. They're going to try to hijack this entire voting system, and they're going to throw it in the toilet. And everything the crazy people were saying, that we're actually not too crazy now, about the fact that the radicals were going to get into power and never let go of power again. Are you worried about that?
Yeah. I mean, if you study the game of chess, there's about a dozen or more different ways to put the opponent into checkmate. And what's concerning here is politically, I would say the same is true. And they're pursuing most of those approaches. So it's not even a singular approach, but where it's headed is toward a uniparty system where Republicans are Republicans in name only, rhinos basically, who are not rewarded for questioning the direction of things, are stifled in doing so, are not afforded a voice, and where we have no real institution that is holding this government accountable from pursuing some of the most illogical ideas, like the 30, 40 plus executive orders that Biden just signed.
Yeah. You know, like I just found, let me share this with you. The opposed, I want everybody to know, the House Republican bill is called Save Democracy Act, Michael. OK, that's what that's called. Yeah, on
like
the
I
other
said,
side.
What I tell you.
Yep.
You're going to oppose that. You're going to oppose that, Malcolm.
So this one
is democracy.
This one is protects. Now, this. OK, so the Republican bill protects against election irregularities and voter fraud during the election. Let me read this to you. The GOP initiative seeks to prevent automatic voter registration for federal elections, prohibits states from sending out unrequested absentee ballots, and calls for a ban on using public ballot collection boxes. Of course, Michael and I have talked about this till we're like got dry mouth for the last many months.
We never held anyone accountable.
I know.
They did all those things. And I'm not forget, like we get into the extreme of overturning the election, but why, like in that Wisconsin case that we talked about, where you've got a multiple series of violations. Firstly, you have private charitable monies come in to pay for those boxes. Illegal. Okay. Our elections are paid for by government and government alone. You can't just as a singular individual or as any entity come in and just sort of start redirecting voting practices. Then they set up these drop-off ballots, which they put in the most liberal Democrat areas of the state, mostly in Madison, Wisconsin, where University of Wisconsin is. And they pick them all up, they count those votes, and those are still in the final numbers. Mm-hmm. Nobody said, hey, you can't do voting that way. Let's back those few thousand numbers out. let's find out who did that. There's got to at least be a citation, a warning, any criminal ramification. I mean, why do we have statutes if we're not enforcing them? To the point where they've litigated, they've argued, they put papers out on the most minute components of constitutional infringements on this giant issue, which is the most glaring possible violation in the history of our country. We don't get anything out of them. Not a statement, not a gee, we're going to look into this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I am just astonished at the – and they're getting away with it. They're getting away with it because I'm talking about it. You're talking about it, but not enough. We're not getting it out of some of the leading voices in our movement, certainly not out of the party, just the opposite. By the way, let me just take one example. Mitt Romney, who's described this as irresponsible, reckless, an assault on democracy. As I've confronted anyone who says those things, your rebuttal has got to be how many of the thousands of affidavits have you actually read? Because if you haven't read any, you don't warrant having an opinion positively or negatively, right? And you and I wouldn't be on here if we hadn't read those things and viewed them credibly. And as I pointed out before, this is unprecedented in my life. I've been on the losing side of many elections. And never questioned that they were conducted fairly.
Can you tell me this? Can you tell me why the Republican Party, why haven't they requested his Republican card back, Mitt Romney? Why does he still have that? Why haven't they rebuked that and got what?
Well, I think the Utah Republicans need to get it together. I endorsed Romney's opponent in the primary out there, and I thought he had promise. And I gotta be honest, I have never spoken with a Utah-based conservative or Republican who's had anything positive to say about this man. And when you see it, and I see the same thing in Wyoming when I talk to people about Liz Cheney, you start to say, how are these people winning these elections?
That's right.
All right. And I'm not speculating about that, but I'm just telling you the support for these people is very, very limited, and there's a lot of opposition. And so I think if you're in Utah and if you're a Republican, you got to look at what's going on with Liz Cheney right now, where they have the county committees are coming out saying, hey, look, we don't like this impeachment vote. Mm-hmm. You know, you're one of 10 Republicans. Trump won Wyoming with 70% of the vote. All right. So there's lots of enthusiasm in Wyoming for Donald Trump. Here you got a representative who not only casts the vote for impeachment, not only casts that vote hopefully knowing that evidence is not only non-existent, but it's been contradicted now with all kinds of subsequent information, including the fact that the storming of the Capitol was pre-planned, right? Couldn't have been inspired by the speech if it was pre-planned.
Yeah. Let me tell you, Liz Cheney, she will never be accepted again in conservative circles. She has burned her bridge now permanently. You know that, Michael.
Well, you know, and when she made that statement that the Congress, the Capitol, mm-hmm. which is, it's an iconic and hugely important building. It's the House of the People, whatever, was the most sacred building in all of Washington. I think the rebuttal position should be, no, that's, the Section 60 over at Arlington mm-hmm. National Cemetery, mm-hmm. where the Afghan and Iraqi war dead sent by the Bush 43 administration. That's the most sacred ground.
That's good, brother.
And
that's
the argument can be made. Liz Cheney, go spend some time over in Section 60.
And I wouldn't argue that. I don't think the Capitol is the people's house anymore. I don't even look at it. You know what it is? It's Pelosi's house. That lady does what the hell she wants. She thinks she owns the joint. In fact, the people tried to take it back on January 6th. It didn't work out so well, did it, Michael?
That was ill-advised. Right? We're not going to accomplish it. We'll see. We just got to continue. You know, here's the problem with what you were describing, the predicament, very convincingly. I was thinking to myself, gee, kind of leads people into one of two modes. You either you are so enraged and you feel you have such limited options that you sort of take things into your own hands and start doing crazy and illegal things like was done on the 6th. Don't do that. That's bad. That's illegal. It's not helpful to our cause. Or you do the opposite. You just kind of pull the comforter over your head, right? Mm-hmm. And you say, it's all too much to tackle. The forces are too powerful. We can't possibly overcome them. That's also very negative, and it's historically inaccurate because we have proven, including within the last decade, that even facing the greatest political odds, even being outspent, that the power of our identity with the people and our relationship with the people is good enough that we can win all these things back. We do need free and we need these elections to be
amen.
to be legitimate and to be standardized and to be fair, because we can't win rigged ballots, which is why I continue to reiterate this is the issue of our time. I don't know why others aren't seeing it that way, because our ideas, and particularly if we build on the MAGA coalition of ideas that Trump, well, he didn't invent those ideas, but he brought them to the national forefront for the first time as a legitimate governing agenda. Yeah. If we can build on that and stay true and make this a multi-ethnic, broadly inclusive party of working Americans, of everyday Americans, an America First agenda, where that's what we how we make decisions, we're going to win.
All right. Well,
because none of these executective orders, when they're explained to the American people, are defensible.
Right.
And they're not going to resonate.
Yeah. Well, and let me do this as we wind up here. I want to leave folks with a thought here of importance, Michael, and an optimistic thought here about where we're at. Now, you know, I'm thinking here as we've been talking over the last hour, Michael, there's a lot to be uncomfortable with. There are a lot of people who are truly, truly depressed. And I mean that in every sense. People who follow politics, who follow, you know, which is so vitally important that we all do, that we know what's going on, because it will impact all of our lives. Those who pay attention to those who don't pay attention. Again, that old saying is so true. You either get involved in politics or it will surely get involved in you. Well, I'll tell you, the only thing I would say to you all is this. Some of the things we're talking about right now seem so out there. It really is a pinch me moment where you can't even begin to think that this has all really happened. And now all the good that's been done in those 4 years is being totally dismantled in short order, immediately, in a such a radical, extreme way. And I would say to you, the one thing, the mistake I think they are making on the left, rightfully so, and the good for the rest of us who love our country, the only saving grace we have is they haven't done it as a slow creep at this point. They turned the hot burners on immediately, full force. And it is an entirely extreme radical position on all levels. There is nothing here that you can put your teeth into and feel really good about. It doesn't exist in this agenda. And it's not going to change anytime soon, because you don't lead with your worst and then get better. These people are going to get more radical, and that's the danger. The only saving grace is this, my fellow Americans, and I don't know where it all falls, but I will say to you that it is a moment of reckoning in our country where we're going to have to really figure out, you know, who we are, what we are, and what we want to be. And these radical positions, I would hope and believe in my heart, they're going to wake up the independents, the moderates, and the Democrat just left of center, those people, not the Marxists, not those people that are gone. Those people are too far gone, and they've corrupted the Democrat Party as a whole. Those people are going to wake up, and that's the only saving grace we're going to have, is that something will be triggered here, and we will have to take it back. And that's what I leave you with. In other words, it's so radical, it's so bad, it's so dire, that potentially it will wake up all the people who are sleeping as well. And then you will have, in whatever form it takes, I do not know, but you will have some sort of an American revolution right at that moment, I believe, because the radicals are not letting go. I will tell you that right now. I don't say this with any pleasure or any joy in my step, but I say this as a moment of salvation for our country and our future generations here. Thank you for being with us on the journey. It's time to get involved and get loud.